Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Ryan Latanzio, and with here, sitting next to me, is Anne Thompson, as we are both at the Cannes Film Festival.
And this week, we're going to fill you in on everything that's going on here. And there's a lot going on. We are running around with our heads cut off, and we're not getting much sleep, which is, you know, par for the course. That's what you do. And you're reviewing, and we're doing interviews, and, you know, I'm doing some news reporting. I, you know, went to the IMAX lunch today and filed a story. I covered the Meryl Streep conversation and the opening night. So opening night was this French movie called Second Act from Quentin Dupieux, and it was, you know, Léa Seydoux was in it, and Vincent Landon, who I love. The actors were fun, you know, they were having a good time. It was very lightweight and dumb, and I hated it, basically. But it was the perfect opening night movie. The audience ate it up. They loved it. They really did love it. And even Meryl Streep loved it. When in the next conversation the next day, she was very sweet, and after she got her Palme d'Or, and Juliette Binoche, you know, gave her this heartfelt tribute that she had clearly labored over and worked on herself, and really one actress to another, one artist to another, honored Meryl Streep. It was a good match. And I think Streep was duly impressed and pleased. She, by the way, I spoke to someone who reps her, and it was this one of those things where she doesn't do these things. That's why it's so rare to have her here. And they talked her into it. They did.
She said she had to be talked into it.
This is what you need to do. And she did it. And I think she had a good time. And the audiences were so responsive, both on opening night and at her conversation the next day, which was fun. Fun to listen to.
Well, I missed those events, but on the early, I don't even remember which day, but early on, I attended the jury press conference. And, you know, the president of the jury is Greta Gerwig. Other people on the jury include Lily Gladstone, Hirokazu Koreeda, Eva Green, Omar Sy. And they all, of course, got pummeled with political questions that I'm sure that their teams prepped them on prior, because there's a number of scandals that were sort of waiting for the various shoes to drop here, including the supposed Me Too outing that's going to happen.
There's a list going around.
Where is this list? How do we get this list?
The Guardian had something. Well, it hasn't broken yet. So the thing is that this, everybody's sort of waiting for this to drop. It was supposed to be around the Césars, and then they were holding it for Cannes. And there are all these bigwigs on there. They're probably all sending their lawyer teams in there to get them off.
That's
the story, you know. But there was supposedly one filmmaker as well.
Yes, and we have who's here and has a film in, not in the competition, but in the festival. But I don't know if we're supposed to.
We don't know if it's true.
No, it's true. We don't want to be libelous.
Yeah, we don't know. Sure, we don't even know if he's going to end up in the final story. So that's what everyone's talking about. Along with the idea that Judith Goodrich has her. She's an actress who has a Me Too story.
Multiple.
and she has a Me Too short that's playing in the festival, and so she's talking about it also.
Yes.
And so that's part of why it's come up. But the French are dealing with it later than we did in America. And the odd thing is that at our end of the spectrum, the pendulum
swung the other way entirely, where like abuse is
there at the beach. It's not where it was, but it's swung back at least to the middle.
No, it's like not being as taken as seriously as it once was, or at least it's being queried. You know, these allegations and so forth. And I mean, look, we have a filmmaker in the competition that just had a number of sort of allegations said about him, which is Francis Ford Coppola in a Guardian piece. that he exhibited sort of grandpa behavior on set and was, did you read this story?
No.
Oh, you didn't read about this? This is everywhere. Yes. And that he was like ogling women on set and like putting them on his lap. So, you know, and that here was a movie that was shot in America.
All right. So we're going to jump right to the movie of the hour. We have all been speculating about Megalopolis. The movie was shown to distributors early. I have to say, I think they followed probably the worst plan that they could have come up with for how to handle this movie. So the very first screening was reported widely that the distributors didn't like the movie and nobody picked it up. That was, you know, the obvious end result. And then he wasn't going to play it in Cannes unless he had a distributor. Well, that didn't happen. So he did go ahead and submit to Terry Fremo's pleas to play it in Cannes. And then the screening was Thursday night, which is when we're talking. It just ended just now. The embargo just lifted. And we are going to tell you that just as you feared, just as we feared, it's terrible.
It's really bad. I'm sorry. I have to say. Well, let's say, what do we think works about it at first?
Well, you saw it in IMAX.
I saw it in IMAX.
They're going to be showing it. They've committed to showing the movie, whatever distribution it has, because it's visually quite sumptuous.
Yeah, no, I mean, visually, it's stunning. He's doing this Eisenstein kind of thing, even sort of a Ziga Vertov kind of like overlaying of various images. The whole movie sort of moves like a montage almost. Like it really never stops moving.
It's edited to a fairly well. And if it were me, I would go in there and simplify it, stick to the real story, which is carried by Adam Driver. Believe it or not, he's very good in it.
He's very good in it as an eccentric, obsessive architect.
Almost and really, like a Robert Caro, not Robert Caro, the guy that Robert Caro wrote about.
The master builder.
The master builder.
Yes, yeah. But he's really the only character in the movie that is this sort of bacchanalia of all these different archetypes. And I would say, and I'm not alone in feeling this way, that the female characters suffer a bit in this movie. They're kind of objects.
Well, Aubrey Plaza is entertaining.
Sure, sure.
She's actually entertaining. She's a villain. All right. So that's okay. He's trying to compare ancient Rome, the Nero era, the decadence, the fall of Rome. He's trying to say that's the same thing that's happening in our culture. This is a message movie, actually. And he feels strongly about it. But he's gussying it up with all of this Hazari, all the bells and whistles and parties. It's like? It's like Babylon,
right,
in a way.
But it's a message movie, but what is the message?
The message is that we have to pull back from the brink of letting all the rich people gain more power and not taking care of the people.
Well, that's never going to happen. So, but I agree with his point. No, it's interesting about this movie and reminder that he paid for it himself. It's self-funded through his wine money.
Well, it's there's a certain degree of hubris involved in this. You know, why did he feel so strongly about me? So he didn't get anybody to back it ahead of time. And then he didn't get anybody to release it theatrically. And now what will happen is that the critics are weighing in and they're not all positive. Some are positive. David Ehrlich was positive.
Yeah. Well, so the thing is with Coppola, if you look at so many of his movies, especially Apocalypse Now, he mounts these sort of grand opuses where then he later opines about the compromises that he had to make along the process and that how the criticism of them could be explained by that. But now this film, he had complete control of everything from moment
to moment. No one else to blame.
No one else to blame but himself. And is this going to be like an Apocalypse Now, which also at Cannes was booed, which I know you mentioned in a screening that your screening today was booed. And that was a press screening.
Yes, the press screening, there were definite boos. And as we were coming out of the press screening, there the big screens in the Palais were showing the beginning of the actual gala screening and Coppola. What they do is they say, "L'auteur, Francis Coppola," and he walks down the thing and everybody applauds, and they were applauding him. But it was the beginning of the screening, right, not the end.
I'd love to know what the end of that screening looked like.
They'll be polite.
Well, we weren't just now.
No, let me put it another way. He has every right to make this movie if he wants to. If he wants to spend his own money, if he has a vision, if he really wants to do it. But he clearly wasn't thinking about what kind of audience there might be for it. He wants to impose his idea on them.
Right. And it's not a commercial movie. So I can't even identify what the audience is for it.
And there were elements of it that seemed very old fashioned, including the score, I would suggest.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yes. The score, which was recorded in Hungary, and it's very much a Sturm und Drang.
Like his
classical
like his father, right. You know, Carmine. Yeah. And then the other movie that played much better that was anticipated is Andrew Arnold's Bird, which you saw and I'm going to see tomorrow morning.
I saw Bird, which is strangely, it's more warm-hearted than any of her other films, which normally she tends to be dark, even in something like Fish Tank or in American Honey. But this is really, it's almost sort of like a more cuddly story about the relationship between this 12-year-old girl and this vagabond person played by Franz Rogowski, who we know and love from Passages and other films, the German actor, where it's almost like a father figure, but it's also they form a real friendship, and she has a fractious kind of relationship with her father, played by Barry Keoghan, who is donning a lot of tattoos.
He's playing a father.
Barry is, yes, he's a father of two.
Wow, yes. Wow. So there was the Michael Fassbender character in Fish Tank too, in a way.
That's right. That's right.
She's done that before. I look
but
forward to
that
it.
Character, if you remember in Fish Tank,
turned
that
the other
takes
way.
A dark
I know.
Turn.
I know.
Which, you know, you think about movies of hers like Red Road as well. I mean, she tends to, you know, go in that direction, but this is more of a, yeah, this is almost like a feel good kind of a story, but it has an edge to it. I think, I anticipate that this should get distribution fairly quickly.
Oh yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Now the other, there haven't been that many movies. You've seen more of the competition movies already. You've seen some of them early. Other one that played well was The Girl.
Well, so I've seen, yeah, so the two, actually I've seen all the movies that have played in the competition. So over here, Magnus von Horn, The Girl with the Needle, I saw last night, which is about a Danish film about a true story of a serial killer of infants, and very lovely. And it's black and white, shot in the Academy ratio. It feels like that's kind of a style I've seen before. It has a familiar look
what period?
And feel to it. It's in the late 1800s.
Mm.
This film is very challenging, though, and dark and disturbing. And so I don't know. I mean, but this is a strongly women-led jury, so I don't know. It could be something that they would go for. The other one that I saw also is Wild Diamond, which is interesting. We're talking about Andrea Arnold. This film, Wild Diamond, which is about a girl who has aspirations of being a reality TV star, is very similar to Fish Tank. It owes a lot to Andrea Arnold. And you can tell that immediately from the first frame of the film. It's also the only debut in the competition. It would have done better in Uncertain Regard.
Well, then I saw a film in Uncertain Regard called Becoming a Guinea Fowl.
I saw that too.
Which is so good, you know, and it's her second film. The first one got a lot of praise quite a few years ago. It was called I Am Not a Witch. And this one is set in Zambia again. And it's just a great story about women versus men, the older matriarchy versus the younger generation of women, how the culture handles abuse and how it doesn't handle it.
I have a confession about this movie, which I was really enjoying, but I fell asleep for a good period of it. And as I came to, it was over. It was ending. So I'm pretty.
This is camp. This is, it's very normal. Don't beat yourself.
No, I'm
up.
Devastated about it because I was really enjoying it. But it does have distribution already through
A24.
It'll be in the fall festivals. Like, I'll watch it again then.
You'll all see it.
Yeah.
You'll all see it. So the director of Becoming a Guinea Fowl is, which by the way, has beautiful, surreal imagery in it, gorgeous cinematography.
And a great soundtrack.
Incredible costumes. And it moves. It's a great movie. Rangano Nioni. Oh, then, you know, Furiosa, as we predicted, played great. You know, it had a big, big, big screening last night. and George Miller and everybody was down by the beach having a big party. It was sort of the same kind of deal as they did with Elvis last year. And it was really great to see him get an enormous standing ovation at the Palais, and everybody was up in upbeat spirits. And I did an interview with him, and I also talked to his wife, Margaret Sitchell, the editor, who he had another editor do the first pass, and then she came in and, you know, fixed everything, basically. She's very gifted. She did Fury Road. And she said, A, that he will probably keep working. He's 79 years old, but he has no, this is what he does. He's not going to stop. He talked about the, I asked him about all how many of his actors have been miserable and complained about how miserable they were.
We just read a story in the New York Times where Anya Taylor-Joy said she'd never felt more alone in a movie in her entire life.
And she had to cover herself with grime and grit. She had to be in the makeup chair every morning and get there at an ungodly hour. I think that from what I gather, George is simply, here's how he answered the question. He said, actors are very, I'm paraphrasing, special creatures. They have to have extraordinary athletic ability, extraordinary intellect, and extraordinary emotion. And they are warriors. That's what he said. They're warriors. And she may have been a little needy.
Maybe she doesn't want to be a warrior every day.
She talked about having to do a lot of work to become strong enough to handle the guns. She talked about how great her stunt woman was. She talked about, she's putting on a relatively good face, but she definitely was unhappy, and so was Charlize during the filming.
But Charlize
and
still.
And so was Tom Hardy.
But Charlize still wanted to come back and do.
She did.
Furiosa anyway.
And they are warriors. Actors like this. But also, he said that they internalize their characters if they're really good, and that, you know, if you're playing a miserable character who's, you know, on the edge of destruction and anger and misery, then you're going to be
on the edge of anger and destruction and misery.
You're going to be that person. So, yeah, that's what he talked. Yeah, I believe that. But it also may be that he just expects his actors to sort of man up and do the job. In a way that a lot of Hollywood people aren't accustomed to.
Well, there's still a lot to look forward to as we're here. We're going to be here for another week. Tomorrow, the Kinds of Kindness people descend on the Croisette.
And tomorrow night, they show the Paul Schrader movie, O Canada. Right. They're going to show Horizon, the Kevin Costner epic. And then, all right, so we have lots to look forward to. And next week, we're doing our live
podcast. We're doing a live podcast at the American Pavilion. If you're listening and you're in Cannes, it's on Tuesday, May 21st at 2 p.m. at the American Pavilion.
And then we take off.
Do we want to talk about a movie that's not at Cannes that's opening this weekend that you can see from home?
There's a movie called Back to Black. It's about Amy Winehouse. I was fortunate enough to see the documentary by Asif Kapadia, which was an extraordinary documentary.
At Cannes.
Yes. In Cannes, and I interviewed him and everything. And it won, it got nominated and stuff.
It won the Oscar.
Exactly. So this movie is a fiction version. And this is just an unfortunate thing that if you've seen the real thing and you know who she was and how she sounded and what her real story was, as grim and unhappy as it was, she was a great artist. This movie doesn't quite bring you that feeling of truth.
I'm a huge Amy Winehouse fan. And
you do karaoke.
I do karaoke to Amy Winehouse.
I do too.
This summer I had long been a fan. I remember the day she died, I was at work. I was working at the Pacific Film Archive in college. And I was like, I have to go home. Like, I can't be here anymore. But anyway, and that summer that Asif Kapadia documentary came out, I just felt like I was sort of just like oozing out of my pores all the time. Just the misery of this woman and just listening to her music. So if you know what I'm trying to say here is that if you know this story really well, which I think a lot of people do, it's all going to be very trite to you, just the way that it's handled. And there are two like critical mistakes that the movie makes. There's absolutely nothing against this actress, Marissa Abella, who's She's on this HBO show that's really great called Industry. She's very talented. She's a good enough actor, but they make her do her own singing.
So they did this whole thing where they got Nick Cave and they got all these people, all these big music people to produce the music. And they must have spent a fortune preparing the music, preparing her to sing like Amy Winehouse and putting in all the production value that they had to do. I think it was a huge mistake. I agree with you.
Yeah, and they should have just used AI or something to make it sound. Just use your music, use technology more. They should not have done that because this actress, Mircea Bella, her voice is very like front loaded and sort of like higher in a way, whereas like it really came off
as raspy.
Yeah, it's raspy and it's very like guttural where it's coming from Amy Winehouse. The other thing that I think is a huge problem, well, the movies really was definitely made on some level of cooperation with Mitch Winehouse, who we know was really portrayed
the father
portrayed very harshly as kind of enabling her almost enabling her substance abuse problems. This is in the documentary.
And he's just a charming figure here.
Here he's charming. Here you see him in the beginning of the movie being like, don't smoke pot. That's really bad for you. It's like very didactic in this way. But the other thing is that, and this is what I think came from the family, from the estate. The movie is arguing that her death and her devastation was because she just wanted to be a mom and she wanted to be a wife. And I just don't believe that any of that to be true. Amy Winehouse wanted to get fucked up and she wanted to write like crazy, depressing songs. And that was her favorite thing to do. That's what she loved. She did not want to be a mother. And that's the argument that this Sam Taylor Johnson movie seems to be making. It's very offensive.
Also, she's so pursuing, you know, this one guy played by Jack O'Connell, who's fine. It's not his fault.
He's too old to be playing this guy, Blake, though. And he's also in too good a shape. Like Jack O'Connell's a gorgeous guy.
He is.
And he's pretty naked throughout the movie and his body is tight. And that is not the case for Blake, Winehouse's former husband. But then there's a weird scene in prison where, I mean, I can't speak to the whether it happened, but he's like explaining to her that he's like, he's using all this
codependent.
He's using this language that we didn't use. You know what I mean? When she died in 2011.
Yeah. Well, maybe we did. We did.
He's like, this is a toxic relationship. We're codependent, blah, blah, blah. Like that feels very shoehorned in somehow and very canned.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Okay, so enough of that. It doesn't seem to be doing well yet. It opens today, Friday.
Yeah, but it's been playing all over. I mean, it's already, when I went to the IMAX to see Megalopolis, it was playing here. Yeah.
All right. So next week, we will keep you up to date. I mean, there was also a press conference with Terry Fermeau right before the opening, where he too was answering all these, trying to dodge all these questions from the press,
equivocating
always, and not willing to. He hated the Me Too question. He hated the whole question of the Iranian filmmaker coming to Cannes, whether he's going to make it,
and Mohammad Rasoulu
never going back to Iran.
Yeah, he hadn't talked about this before, but he received a prison sentence of 8 years, along with flogging, a fine, all these things, and now he's since fled Iran. But he's in competition for the first time, and it's actually, we won't be here.
It's at the end of the festival.
It's the very last day of the festival. I am seeing it, but it's
Will you see it in time to talk about it on Tuesday?
I will see it. Well, it's true because I'm literally seeing it right before on Tuesday.
We're not allowed to talk about it.
I can say anything. I'll get some advance permission.
All right. Okay. Until next week.
Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.